Welcome to Independence, the FIEC podcast. My name's Phil Topham, Executive Director of the FIEC, and I'm joined for our regular dive into the news this week by John Stevens, our National Director. Good morning, John.
Hi, Phil.
And a warm welcome to our new Head of Local Ministries, Graham Bynan. Good morning, Graham.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Great to welcome you as a member of the staff team. We're going to ask you some questions about your role in a few minutes. But before we do that, let's just give a brief update about where things have been at this week. So I've just got back from Blackpool. I went to see the Illuminations, but more than that, I went to see the Winter Gardens. So we're coming up to the advanced deadline for tickets. Do book before the end of the month to get the best price on the Leaders Conference, and we're really looking forward to that. John, that's going to be a good time, isn't it, as we consider Ministry of Justice?
Yeah, it's really important. We want to get together and just think about what the Bible teaches us about doing justice in God's world. We know from the Bible that God is a God of justice. We know that because we live in a world that's sinful and fallen, justice isn't experienced. We want to ask the question, how is justice restored in the world? How do we bring that about? What part do we have to play as a church in that? And we're going to be thinking about a whole range of different areas, particular aspects of a kind of life and culture at the moment. So issues like economic justice, issues like racial justice. But above all, we're going to be thinking about the church and how the church needs to be a community in which there's true justice practiced within the church that models the coming of God's kingdom to the wider world, and rejoicing in the new creation when finally justice will be done and established for eternity.
Graham, you're doing some seminars for us, aren't you? Just walk us through what you're planning for November.
Well, there are three main sessions looking at justice of God, justice in the church, and justice in the world. And my seminar track is going to follow each of those sessions and dig into those in more detail. Hopefully stretching a little bit in some of our thinking, laying out some of the variety of opinions there can be. The FIEC is not on one mind on some of these things, so sketching some of the territory and hopefully exploring that in a helpful way.
And modelling how to do that graciously, because we're not all on the same page on some of these things.
Yeah, if I can be gracious, that would be great.
Graham, you are definitely a gracious man. This is good news.
And it's worse than that's true about FIEC in a whole load of areas. We're united by some core gospel convictions, things that unite us and things that we stand together on. But within our churches, there's a wide variety of practice in terms of ministry and how it's done and the focus of local churches, a wide diversity of view on other issues that aren't within our sort of statement of faith and ethos statement. So we want to basically reflect that and honour that, but also to help think about how we can biblically work for appropriate justice within the world.
So book your tickets before the end of the month to get the best price if you've not already. And good news, food lovers, we've got a better option for lunch this year, which I was clear on with the venue when we visited yesterday. So I think that is the big takeaway from yesterday. We're not having takeaway. We're having a nice lunch this year at the Leaders' Conference. So we're looking forward to that. John, speaking of kind of gospel partnership and unity, you've been with the Friends Affinity this week. Just tell us a bit about what that was happening in London.
Yeah, I'm a member of the Affinity Council. They meet a couple of times a year. It's a great opportunity to be able to gather together and build gospel fellowship and friendship with those who would be kind of like-minded again in their core evangelical convictions. So groups like the Free Church of Scotland, the Evangelical Fellowship of Congregational Churches, the Grace Baptist Churches, ourselves, Church Society, and a number of kind of agencies like London Seminary and mission organisations, London City Mission and CARE and others. So it was an opportunity to gather together to think about how we can foster unity and support for one another. We were delighted this time to have James Mildred, who's from CARE and works for CARE, and is also an elder in FIEC Church. He was talking about the whole issue of cultural engagement and models of how we engage with a secular culture and what our expectations ought to be for that. And I think James is actually speaking at the Leaders Conference as well. So it's great that he's going to be...
The producers have nodded. He is. This is good.
Absolutely. So it was a little bit of a foretaste. So that was stimulating. Again, a diversity of different approaches that were being reflected within the Affinity constituency.
And while I was while you were in London, John, I was chairing our national recognition team. It was great to welcome some new churches to FIEC this week, some new pastors to the Pastors Network, which is a great encouragement. And Graham, I wonder if we can just talk about your role for a few minutes. So welcome. We wanted to take some time in this podcast to just help you to introduce yourself to folk who listen and to some of our church leaders. Just tell us a bit about how you found this first couple of weeks and what you're hoping you might be able to do under the Lord in this coming season.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here. The first couple of weeks have been, fine. A little bit overwhelming.
Fine. What a review.
Yeah. just there's quite a lot to get my head around and understand how things work and so on. So that'll just take a little while. I mean, the FIEC's great desire is to be helpful to churches, to help churches. And my role, I see it as helping out the local level rather than the things that run nationally. And that could be responsive, so churches that have issues, questions, concerns. It could be responsive negatively because it's a problem. It could be responsive positively. One of my first bookings, as it were, is to go and talk to a church about church planting.
Fantastic.
You know, they say they'd like to, but they're not sure where to start. I'm fairly well placed to help with that. So what a great thing to do. It could be helping proactively, providing resources, providing input. That could be at an individual level. It could be at a local level and so on. Key within all of that are the local directors who are that much closer to on the ground.
Growing areas. Team of guys as well.
And, that's, and there's a lot of new, you know, there have been some in place for a while. Some have come into place over the last year. There are plans for more. So I've just been getting to know them, meeting up with them, planning how that team will work together. And just asking the question, how can we be helpful to FIC churches?
Fantastic. What are you particularly looking forward to in your role, Graham?
That's a very good question.
Evidently one you've not thought about, brother.
So. Yeah. I guess, I mean, it's going to be a slightly vague answer, but I guess over the last years, I've been involved in both pastoring churches and teaching and training. And some of this sort of stuff, like visiting a church to talk about church planting or advising a local pastor, I've done quite a lot of that, but I'm always squeezing it in around the edges of my normal job. And so in one sense, what I'm looking forward to is that that can become my job. And that's what I can focus on. And if I can be helpful, then I'm glad.
It's important to say you're still going to be serving Oak Hill as well. So tell us about your role there. You're continuing to lecture, aren't you?
Yeah, thank you. So the last years I've been pastor of a church in Cambridge and on the faculty of Oak Hill part-time. That's all changed. I'm employed by the FIC. But the FIC has seconded me back to Oak Hill to continue doing some teaching, particularly within the independent students. I do more than that, but that's the real focus. So most of a day a week during the semester, I'll be lecturing there. Out of term time, I'll be with the FIC full time.
Yeah, worth saying, Oak Hill Theological College in London, in case anyone's listening from around the world who doesn't know what that is. But yeah, you'll still be lecturing and still be serving at our churches at that end. John, what are you really excited about for Graham's role?
Well, I'm delighted that Graham's been able to come and join us. This is a whole growing area of ministry, and we're wanting to develop our care for churches, our connecting with churches at a local level. We want to provide pastoral support for churches. Many of them face significant challenges, and we want to be there to be able to help them. So we're growing teams that will be doing both of those things, our local directors team, our kind of care and support for pastors. We want to continue to help churches where there are difficulties and sort of challenges. We, under our policy, if there are issues raised about kind of pastoral malpractice, we need as an FIC to be able to address that, and we want to be able to do that really well and in a helpful way, both for people who have concerns and also for churches. So those are very much things that Graham is going to be taking a lead in and helping us with. So we're just delighted to have so much experience of ministry, of training, of teaching, to help us develop those areas of kind of our work. But the real excitement, I guess, is engaging with churches and helping those churches in their ministry and being able to rejoice with them as God works and blesses to them. So just this weekend, Graham is off preaching at Grace Church Hilton, celebrating a kind of a 10th anniversary of a church plant in a village in Derbyshire. I'm preaching at King's Church Guildford, the installation of kind of Richard Perkins as their new pastor. And those kinds of things are just hugely encouraging as we get to connect with our churches, support them and encourage them and rejoice in how the Lord is working through them and hopefully be something of a help and encouragement to them.
Well, welcome, Graham. We're delighted to have you on the team, and hopefully we'll be hearing more of you on the podcast as well. Let's dive into a couple of news stories from the week, if we may. I want us to start with talking about two more human tragedies, Morocco and Libya, the earthquake in Morocco, the Libyan floods. Once again here, we see a human tragedy, John.
A tragic situation. I think in Morocco, earthquakes have meant that something like an estimated at the moment 2,000 people have been killed in the earthquakes in Morocco. In flood, the Libya, the floods have been more devastating than that. I think the latest statistic I read was about 20,000 people who have been killed there. So a tragic loss of life. We live in a world in which these kind of natural disasters are fairly regular around the world. We know biblically that we live in a creation that's been subject to frustration, and this is part and parcel of living in a fallen world. world, but that doesn't take away from the sort of tragedy for so many people whose lives have been lost relatives, lost their homes, and our hearts go out to them.
And it's been interesting to see from my perspective that this is a story that hasn't dominated the headlines in a way that I personally feel that it should have done. So before we came into the podcast, I was contrasting it with the escaped prisoner from last week, how that led to the headlines for many days, but was objectively not as serious a human tragedy as this. Why do some things, Graham, lead the headlines and some things don't quite lead the headlines in the same way?
Yeah, it's a difficult thing to know exactly what the sort of paradigm is for how they decide these things. And there's clearly, obviously, the significance of the issue in question. And here, as you say, it's huge. I mean, it's massive. But there's also a kind of proximity issue. So I don't think it's wrong that things that are more local to us take up more news. That's fine. But you've got to put those two together. And on any kind of equation, it seems to me, this hasn't been paid appropriate attention. You compare it to the Ukraine war, you know, story after story after story on the BBC website. Whereas, you know, the floods in particular, I think, have had, it's reached the top of the BBC news a little bit and then just dropped down and sometimes dropped off. And that's just extraordinary.
You were saying, Graham, that in Libya, it's been particularly challenging from a government perspective as well.
Yeah, well, I think there's reflection for us as to what's on our radar, as you've been saying, in terms of the news. Is there a dismissal of things inappropriately? But I think one of the real tragedies of that story is how the effectively non-functioning of the government is then restricting aid. I don't understand the government system there well, what's happened since Gaddafi, but it's a mess, that's for sure. And the result is, you can't apply to, you know, we'd like to provide aid. Who do we talk to? You know, there are different representatives. So just on the news this morning, I heard someone reporting from one of the airports that's expecting there to be aid planes coming in and in and in, and there was basically nothing. And it's an example, I guess, a knock-on effect of sin, isn't it? You know, where there's a sin has affected the way a government, a country is run and the way a government runs. And that is now having knock-on effects on the people.
John?
Yeah, I mean, I think Graham's absolutely right. Proximity, you have a duty to be more concerned about things that are closer to you than things that are further away. God doesn't call us to care about everything that's happening in the world. We couldn't possibly bear that weight. And we do live in a world in which things are brought to our attention immediately, about which we're able to do very little. And it becomes kind of almost global entertainment to kind of watch it. So yeah, you know, in Ukraine, numbers of casualties per week. We don't get now details of the numbers who are being killed, the ongoing consequences there. I think of North Korea in the news with Kim Il-jong visiting kind of Putin, and actually in labor camps in North Korea, there's appalling kind of treatment going on. I think of China and the whole news about how the Uyghurs are being persecuted in China. That tends to have dropped out of the news. So things feature for a moment and then disappear. But the human suffering is ongoing behind that. I guess we have to take some confidence that God is omniscient, knows everything, cares about everything. And in a way, we have to be able to leave some of those things with him. I think the thing about the British news in our context is you mentioned the story of the terrorist who's escaped. The reality is our news is often dominated by immensely trivial things of kind of celebrity life. And actually, it's that tension between very real human tragedy and utter trivia of a kind of celebrity life. And I think I find that more difficult. What can we do in these situations? Well, if our hearts are touched by what's going on in Morocco and Libya, there are ways that we can give to help with that. The British Red Cross has launched a fund for Libya. The Disasters Emergency Committee is thinking about doing that. So there are ways in which we can give to trusted agencies that might be able to bring help in that situation. Worth remembering that both countries are countries in which there are very few Christians. Being countries from a Muslim background, there are agencies that want to work supporting the Christians in those countries who face persecution and marginalization. I would say that as Christians, we've got a particular responsibility to serve and support sort of them. So there are practical ways that we can provide some help. And again, I think of Paul in the New Testament. He encourages the churches to give to a collection for the benefit of poor believers who are suffering and struggling elsewhere. Again, there is something you can do, but it's not quite as proximate to you as kind of caring for the very people on your doorstep who might be poor, who are in need.
We've said before on the podcast at church, at Christchurch, we pray every week for a country of the world where the church is persecuted. And this is an opportunity to think about that again. You know, Open Doors, for example, will be able to let us know what the kind of Christian population is there, how we can pray for those in Morocco and Libya as well.
Very much.
Let's move on. We had a story in the news yesterday, which I was absolutely fascinated by, which was the story of NASA reporting back on UFOs, or as they call them, UAPs, unidentified anomalous phenomena. I'm not sure that will quite catch on. I think UFO has probably stolen the day. There's lots of things to talk about here. Essentially, it seems to me that NASA's conclusion is something along the lines of, there's no proof that aliens exist, but they might do. So we're kind of back in the 1990s and X-Files territory. I've been on the phone to Mulder this morning. He's got many things to follow up on. This does seem extraordinary. That basically yesterday was really pitched as a big kind of event where they would feedback everything that they'd learned. But the reality is they haven't really learned very much. Is that, am I overreaching?
Well, yeah, I think that's been the general. Obviously, the response has been people are claiming a conspiracy on the part of the government that it's been hiding a kind of knowledge about aliens, UFOs, etc. In America, there's somebody who's been claiming that the American government has alien spaceships. In Mexico this week, sort of the Senate was presented with supposed evidence of bodies of aliens that had been found in a mine in the country, claiming that this is here evidence of aliens having visited Earth. So there's lots going on here. There's people's kind of desire to sort of have that sense that we're not alone in the universe, plus a whole load of conspiracy theory about how government knows, but they haven't kind of told us, going right back to the Roswell incident, all of which, of course, has been built on by numerous sort of science fiction films that kind of present this kind of narrative. So yeah, the nub issue that's been raised is the question of evidence. Is there really evidence for those things that are being kind of claimed? And the appointment of somebody within NASA to investigate things is exactly for that purpose. So there are no doubt there are unexplained phenomena captured by pilots, seen by others. NASA has said in the vast majority of cases, there are logical explanations for those. There's some explanation, a weather balloon or whatever. There are some that it's not known what the reason is, but you can't necessarily draw the conclusions about aliens and extraterrestrial life just from that. But I don't want to shock you, but I do firmly believe in extraterrestrial life.
Hang on, let's say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can we tweet that?
and not only do I believe in extraterrestrial life, I think that there is solid evidence for it. And I think that extraterrestrial life has visited Earth. I think as a Christian,
where to begin? Let's unpack that a little bit. Strap yourselves in, folks. Let's go back a step. So some Christians would say there absolutely can't be any life anywhere else. So let's start there. What makes you say that there is extraterrestrial life?
Well, the Bible tells me there is.
If you
read the Bible, it's quite simple. We are not alone in the universe. We are not the only beings that exist. There is life that is not on Earth, that in that sense is extraterrestrial. So you can read the Bible and it speaks about, of course, the existence of angels, the existence of demons, the existence of beings that are kind of not earthly and human in that sense. And of course, ultimately, God himself is an extraterrestrial being. In fact, the extraordinary thing about the Christian story is the being who is the ultimate extraterrestrial came and became a human being and became a man and visited us. The Bible is filled with stories of the visitations of that extraterrestrial life, people who were spoken to, and ultimately, of course, Jesus himself coming into the world. So at one level, I know I'm only slightly joking, at one level, I think we do need to recognize the Bible speaks about a universe in which kind of human life is not the only form of life and existence within the universe. That's absolutely fundamental to a Christian worldview of the universe as we understand it. And we would believe that it's not a conspiracy theory that this life exists, but there is solid evidence on the basis of people's experience. And ultimately, of course, Jesus coming into the world in a historically verifiable way.
Graham?
Very good.
I wasn't asking you to review his answer. I was all wondering if you wanted to add anything further.
No, I think, but that's really helpful, isn't it? Because it's that whole "are we alone" thing. The Christian has a very clear answer to that. Of course we're not.
Yeah.
And of course, that extraterrestrial life of a supreme sort has actually shown interest in us and come to us,
which is incredible.
So the headlines are nowhere near what they ought to be. Mm. And it's wonderful to be able to turn that on its head and come back with that. And in a sense, answer some of those speculations from people. If you narrow the question and say, then is there life on other planets? You know, which is obviously what this is talking about. I mean, you know, the speculation will continue. You know, the occasional gas is found. I gather there was a new gas found this week, which would be consonant with life somewhere, but nothing is clear evidence. And everyone will have their own opinion on that. If there is anything else out there, as it were, God knows about it. God's sovereign over it. We shouldn't be too troubled.
I remember listening to an interview with Professor Brian Cox some years ago, and he basically said, we, as in human beings, might well be the best there is. And that's an atheist scientist, and actually backing the Bible's view.
Yes, from a scientific perspective, and I can't remember the name of the guy, but it was a famous theorem about 50 years ago of somebody saying, you know, given the universe, given scientific theories of the scale of the universe and the age of the universe and the likelihood of evolution of life elsewhere over that time span, the extraordinary thing is that you would expect there to be aliens, you would expect them to have visited us, you would have expected them to be in contact with us, and where are they? Mm. And at one level, the evidence for any clear evidence for the absence of a kind of alien life on the purely scientific view of the universe as it's understood seems to me fairly compelling. The kind of burden of proof would be massively on those who want to prove there's some kind of life. And at the most, people seem to be talking about kind of, you know, bacteria on Mars or kind of on our planets or elsewhere. The idea that it's kind of high level kind of life that's sort of evolved elsewhere, that is just pure speculation. And at the moment, all of the evidence, and indeed scientifically, all of the probability would say that that is not the case, which is consonant with the biblical view that the earth is the center of God's plans and purposes. That's where his redemption was brought about. That's where kind of humanity was created to rule as his representatives. It's kind of like that throwaway line in kind of Genesis, isn't it? You know, he made the stars also. Mm. The kind of mistake of the church in the past was to think that that meant the earth was the literal center of the universe and everything went round it. But from a spiritual, theological perspective, that actually remains true, that it is this planet, which seems at the moment to be unique in terms of being able to sustain the kind of life that we have, that is the very center and heart of God's purposes. And one of the extraordinary thing is that in a universe that is so vast and so huge, displaying the power of God in remarkable ways that previous generations could only grasp at, that we can see far more clearly with our kind of modern scientific kind of equipment, that actually it's humanity that is the very center of God's purposes and plans. And that brings us just tremendous value and significance. That's again at the very heart of the Christian story.
And if you wanted to push it a bit, if you want to push the parallel a little further, the whole conspiracy theory cover up, people are hiding the truth. Well, that is actually what we've all done. That is what Romans 1 says. Mm. There is truth about something out there, as it were, and we've suppressed it.
Mm. I remember in the 90s and noughties going to like Spring Harvest and other Christian festivals, and you could buy hoodies with a Bible on it, which had an X on it, and it said, the X Files, the truth is in here. Yeah. It's absolutely right, isn't it? Can I just push on something else you said before, Graham? And you talked about, you know, if there is life on other planets, God is sovereign over it. How do we help God's people with that kind of concept and just thinking that through? Because some people might not be able to kind of brush it aside quite as easily as that if they're perhaps they're struggling with it. How can, if church leaders get questions about this, how can we help them with those answers?
Yeah, I think partly perspective. You know, this is, we're talking hypotheticals, we're talking speculation. So let's just keep that perspective for a start. And then as John has said, that the most any evidence would even begin to hint at is things like bacteria forms, you know, microbes and whatever. And that, I mean, if that was discovered and proved, that would be no trouble to the Christian worldview. The Christian worldview says that the earth is the center of God's redemptive plans and his sort of kind of theater of operation. I guess you could come up with some finding, you know, hypothetically, that could challenge that. That would be challenging to the Christian worldview. We're nowhere near anything like that.
Mm-hmm. And that's how we can help people think about it. The conspiracy theory, though, can go a bit further, can't it? So people do like to believe in conspiracy theories. And we've got to help them with that as well, John.
Yeah, and I think we have to recognise the conspiracy theory is actually an act of faith at one level. In fact, even blind faith in many instances, not rooted in a kind of any truth. And it does touch on the whole question of why do you believe what you believe and on what solid foundation is that kind of based? So the conspiracy theory is often based on a generalised distrust of government and authority. Therefore, kind of assumptions are made on that basis. And when evidence is presented, it turns out to be extraordinarily weak. So again, as I said, in Mexico, there'd been this claim of these bodies that have allegedly were alien bodies discovered in a mine.
The pictures are quite interesting, though, aren't they?
Yeah, they look like E.T., basically.
Yeah, essentially.
And actually, again, I think it was in 2017, they were regarded as being fraudulent and actually made from kind of human fetuses. So it seems that there's some sort of scam going on there, which to me is no different from, say, for example, the Shroud of Turin. There are kind of, you know, scams that people believe in for which there's no real evidence that that's believable. And then the guy who is speaking in America about how the government's got kind of UFOs, I think he said they've got a UFO as big as a football field somewhere. It's called David Grutch. And the NASA spokesman, basically, when questioned about his testimony, basically said this. He said, and what he said, if I recall, was that he had a friend who knew where a warehouse was that had a UFO locked up in a warehouse. And he also said that he had another friend, and he said that he had parts of an alien or whatever. And that's what it boils down to. I've got a friend who's a friend who's told me that he knows there's a warehouse with a UFO in it and alien bodies. Now, that's hardly a substantial basis on which to kind of hold unbelief. But people think Christian faith is just as shoddily based as that. That sort of it's a leap in the dark, or as the old schoolboy thing is, faith is believing what you know is not true. And actually, it's completely different. Christian faith is based on firm kind of evidence, evidence that is historically verifiable, evidence from over a period of a couple of thousand years that's consistent. There are good reasons for believing that Jesus is the Son of God who came to save and rescue people and died and rose again. It is not some sort of fantastic conspiracy theory based on a friend of a friend of a friend who said something.
It's important to remember that, isn't it? It should give us great confidence as we speak about the gospel as well, that we're not talking in these same realms.
Yeah, very much, very much. You can't prove the gospel in the way a scientific proof would work, but that does not mean it is sort of anti-rational or unreasonable to prove. It doesn't mean it's not based on anything. We've got to be sure of that.
And I think that the very fact that NASA, America, there's a demand for people to investigate the evidence. At one level, that's a good thing. That's the way to approach these kinds of questions. And I guess as Christians, we would love that far more people would want to investigate the truth of the claims of the Christian faith so that they will know, is it a conspiracy theory or not? Kind of things like, for example, Christianity Explored or Hope Explored or Word One-to-One are ways in which people can encounter the core evidence for the Christian faith, or kind of uncover within the world of kind of UCCF, going back to the Bible, going back to the records about Jesus and what he said, what he did, in their historical kind of context. And actually, we'd want to sort of encourage people to do that. And our churches are working to encourage people to look at the evidence so that they can make a judgment.
And that is a fantastic thing to do, isn't it? We want to encourage many more to do that. Brothers, time has beaten us. Thank you so much for joining us on In the News, the FIEC podcast. Graham, go well this weekend at Hilton. John, go well at Guildford. You've been listening to In the News, the FIEC podcast, Independence. Do leave us a review. Rate it so others can find it. And we hope that you'll join us again very soon. Have a great weekend. God bless.